You're listening to KYRS Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM. Good afternoon, you're listening to KYRS. You're also listening to Praxis. Before we begin, I'll remind you that Praxis receives support from the Smith Barbieri Progressive Fund, a charitable foundation. Information at smith-barbieri.com. As I said, you are listening to Praxis. In a moment of perfect timing, all of my guests for today's roundtable are now present. I talked last week, if you listened to the show last week, about having a roundtable for Pride Month, which is just coming to a close now. As I always say, every time I do anything for anything month, I think it should be something we celebrate all the time. You hear me say this during Black History Month, Women's History Month, Pride Month, but I'm going to use this opportunity to kind of highlight local activism, kind of a state of the union, 25 years into Spokane's Pride celebration. So I'm here with Adrian Murillo, Michael Jepson, Bob Maureen, and Jansen Nichols, all talking about their roles, young and old and long-term and short-term, in the LGBT activist community here in Spokane. Is that what you're all here for?
I thought I was here for... Yes.
You didn't eat those donuts, did you? Okay, good. There. So I don't know where we want to start, but I was thinking that it would be good to go around and kind of just check in with who everybody is, what their story is regarding working in the gay community, working especially in any kind of activism, and what the last 25 years have been for you. Where do you think we are? Let's start with Adrian. We'll tinker with the equipment. Joys of Live Radio.
Okay. 25 years ago, I was in Oregon, steeply involved with fighting the far right, this organization called the Oregon Citizens Alliance, the OCA, which kept launching these anti-gay initiatives on the state level, county level, city levels. And it was, and they kept getting defeated, but they kept coming back with another one and another one. And it dragged on for several years. But each time, Oregon defeated them. So that's when I really got politically involved on the campaign level, electoral level, about defending gay civil rights. But I've also, you know, I've been at this all my life, really. I'm a child of the 60s and 70s. And so in the mid-80s, I worked at the Gay and Lesbian Center in Hollywood as a youth coordinator, doing a lot of street outreach and facilitating drop-in rap groups, which I really loved. We would average 50 to 60 kids on Friday nights, every Friday night in Hollywood. And I really learned more than I taught, I feel.
Yeah. So what was that like? I mean, obviously those are really diverse places geographically. Where do you think Spokane fits on that spectrum?
Well, coming from California, which is very progressive, I feel like it's kind of still in the early 70s in lots of ways. You know, there's a lot of people who have accepted, you know, personal liberation, but there's still a lot of political work around guaranteeing civil rights and human rights.
Right. How about you, Michael, now that we got you mic'd up?
Well, 25 years ago, to riff on what Adrian said, I was part of the LGBT community. I identify as a bisexual male. I knew people who marched in the first Pride Parade, and I knew some of the teachers from District 81 who wore paper sacks on their heads so as not to be outed at work and lose their job, potentially lose their jobs. My marriage lasted 20 years. When I returned to the LGBT community, I was looking for something to do in Spokane that wasn't bar-centric, and met a guy who said, hey, you should come visit Out Spokane. And this year I was able to serve as chair of Out Spokane for the 25th Pride. Our theme again was From Silence to Celebration. And to kind of go on what Adrian said, I kind of have a vibe that locally it's more of a libertarian approach, kind of the old Victorian standard of as long as they're not doing it in the street and frightening the horses. kind of approach. I do want to say that as we were setting up for our parade here in Spokane this year, we had a protester who said that if he were given the opportunity, he'd pull a trigger in a firing squad or drop a gas canister in a gas chamber. And I just laughed it off. And, you know, just a few hours later, we were looking at what I view as the death throes of the haters. I mean, I really think they know they're losing the battle of history. And so they're going down swinging, the last remnants of that.
Yeah. How about you, Bob?
I just want to add to that. This is Bob. And I always say that when you get the haters at a parade, you know you've done a good job. When they show up, then you know there's success. And so it used to be something that was so irritating to me. And even, you know, all the big city prides happened this weekend, San Francisco, New York City, Chicago,
Seattle,
and all of them had protesters. So it's a success, I see.
While you're there on the mic, do you want to say who you are? I mean, longtime regular KYRS listeners recognize your dulcet tones. But can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. So I host Queer Sounds here in Spokane and across the World Wide Web. And I have been out since 1996 as a big homo. Gender bending since I was born, probably before I could even crawl. I've been working in the queer community. I used to run the Queer Youth Center in Salt Lake City, Utah, from 2000 to 2004. So, and in those days, we saw about 400, 450 kids, different kids, every single week at the center. And in those 4 years, I met two parents who actually were okay with their kids coming to the center. Other kids, it was like big secret. You know, you got dropped off by the buses, or you made excuses that nobody really knew you were going to the center, but two parents. Now, the youth centers, queer youth centers all over, parents, like, you know, you could be grounded for not doing your homework, but you're not, you can still go to the queer youth center in most places. We're still a lot of work to do in some of the smaller communities like Spokane, but for the most part, we're getting more parents who know that that's a good thing. So my, I've been doing nonprofit work my entire adult career, but as a professional queer, that's where I really saw the impact and the power that personal bodies have. When you're a marginalized human, you are political, whether you want to be or not. And so for me, I moved to Spokane in 2006. So I've been here 10 years. And when I got here, I was so sad because I was like, Spokane is like 20 years behind Salt Lake City. And I thought Salt Lake City was behind. So Salt Lake City is actually one of the most progressive cities ever, especially for queer communities. And in the last 3 years, I've seen a really big jump in terms of support and even just people coming out and being queer, because it's still very binary space. It's very, if you come out as a lesbian, this is what it means to be a lesbian. If you come out as gay, this is what it means to be gay. And visibly queer people are still really hard to find. When I'm the queerest person in the room and I'm like stereotypically lesbian, then that's an issue for a lot of like queer identified people. So I'm excited to be here. I'm excited you're going to facilitate this conversation, Taylor.
Yeah. So, Jansen, you haven't been here for 25 years on this planet, but I'm wondering what's your impression as someone who's you're living in the result of the history that was just discussed? And I feel like just in my lifetime, things seem to be a lot different. What do you think about that? Not to make you speak for all young people, but, you know.
No, absolutely. Seeing things like Leela's Law being passed and the marriage equality bill that came into effect, it gives this shadow that when we do eventually take the reins, my generation will obviously have it a lot easier. There will still be a lot of uphill battles, but it's phenomenal how we've seen from Stonewall to Orlando that the world banded together even for a week and managed to shout love even through the outrage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what's your story? Do you consider yourself an activist?
Oh, yeah. I'm a transgender male, and having to come out and transition publicly because I do a lot of performing in the slam poetry scene. A lot of acquaintances and dear friends I've made so far have come out, and I've gotten to watch them grow. And it's important because people like me, as we grow up, we're educating our parents and our loved ones and older minds around us, and we're helping them understand the movement. So it's not just young people anymore. It's people from all walks of life and ages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I wonder that, so you say the movement, and I wonder about that because I know that there's some tension with just a lot of people I know, and it's universal political tension that we talk about on the show a lot, between people with kind of like radical goals of like change everything, burn it down, which I tend to be in that camp in a lot of ways, and then people who say, you know, one step at a time. Mm-hmm. The idea of marriage equality kind of being the public face of LGBT movements. What do all of you think about that? What is the movement to you? Like, what are we aiming for, other than now, you know, in the wake of Orlando, like basic mm-hmm. safety for people?
Marriage equality almost felt like a Band-Aid on a wound. It helped suppress the bleeding, but it's not going to fix everything. We still have trans panic laws in effect. We have transgender people who have hard times accessing basic health care. We have gay men that can't donate blood. There's a lot of fine-tuning, I feel, but if we're metaphorically carving out a cello from a block of wood, we're a lot farther from when we started.
Speaking as a bisexual male, I would just say, again, I'm affected by the MSM ban by the FDA. We've made so much progress, and I've always been of the opinion, don't let the perfect get in the way of the better. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to take this still one step at a time. And I'm not, you know, I'm a very bourgeois, boring, middle-class, middle-aged guy. And so I happen to like the comforts of the society we have. And again, part of that is I was in a heteronormative marriage for 20 years. And I had what you might call passing privilege. Mm-hmm. But again, I think that now we need to focus on our trans siblings. And that is the next forefront once basic human rights are established. Bob said something that I had completely forgotten. What really made me become more of an activist instead of a checkbook activist was when I was bashed, and then 10 days later a close friend of mine was bashed in parking lots here in Spokane.
Do you mean like physically assaulted?
Physically assaulted for being perceived as being gay.
Hmm.
And that really woke me up that while things are a lot better than they were when I was a young teenager in the Spokane Valley in the 1980s, things aren't good. Mm-hmm. Things still have a long way to go.
I think that, here's a story. 3 years ago, I was living in Berkeley, and I've lived in Berkeley and Oakland, San Francisco at different times in my life, and I was there in 2012, 2013, and I was living just a couple of blocks from the north gate of the UC campus, and I walked through the campus to get to the library downtown, and one summer day like this, I was walking to the library, and I realized as I was walking downtown, there were these two high school boys in front of me walking down the street holding hands and wrapping their arms around each other and laughing and giggling and talking to each other and just, you know, in that bubble of first love, you know, that glow, and the world didn't exist for them. They were just discovering each other, and they'd hold hands, and then they'd wrap arms around each other, and they'd hold hands again as they're just walking down the street. And nobody batted an eye. Nobody flinched or looked, but no one turned around and looked at them as they passed them on the street. You know, there were people on, you know, a lot of street kids sitting on the sidewalk selling trinkets and stuff, and it was just no big deal. And I thought, yeah, well, this is my hometown, Berkeley. Of course, this has got to be like that here in Berkeley. But this is the way the world should be, you know, and that's my model. That's my standard, you know. We went from, you know, a liberation movement to really find out who we are, you know, and to conforming to heteronormative standards. And so my goal in the movement is to abolish those standards, you know.
I think what I have to say actually fits in nicely with what you just said, and I was worried that it might not, but I'm fine, like, not fitting in. I think, Taylor, you asked a couple things in terms of, you know, the response after marriage equality and looking at Orlando. And I think the LGBTQ community has a couple things that they've missed along the way. Number one, and I'm probably going to get emotional because I've been emotional all day, so you're all just going to have to hear me walk through this. Number one, I participated in most of the Chicago Pride events this past week and was flying back from Chicago to Spokane yesterday during all the parades. So I had Wi-Fi, so I watched the New York City parade, and it was amazing. The very first march in most of the parades was people who were marching, and they were representing the victims of the Orlando shooting, which was a great way to just bring reality into how important it is for people to come out and the reality when people do come out and go to their place of community. The transgender individuals are the people who made all of our being out possible. And as a queer community, the LGB people in the community who carried the most privilege left them in the dust for the last whatever now is minus 1970, whatever year that was.
Oh, no, it was
36 years.
Yeah, it was a trans woman of color.
Oh, it was a teenager. It was a youth. It was a youth trans person who threw the first high heel at the police. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And just as a queer community, we've ignored the transgender individuals for a really long time. So in my mind, it's so nice to see the queer community allowing those voices. But I think there's two issues happening. We talk about heteronormativity, and that's only about who you're sleeping with. And we always forget to talk about gender and the fact that even women who are straight don't have the same rights from Washington to California to Iowa. So female bodies, your body is political. As a queer community, our bodies are political. In terms of, I feel like it's really important as queer people, especially white queer people who carry a lot of privilege, to be able to name that and use that to help create change instead of just change for them, because we have to remember that most people now have multiple marginalized identities. You're not just queer. Most queer people are not just queer. Some are, but most are not. And so we tend to leave the people with multiple marginalized identities in the margins, and we don't want to talk about them, and we want to say it's one step at a time. I do believe every movement needs every bit of radicalism and all the tiny little steps along the way. However, I'm with you. I feel like marriage equality, it was a tiny step along the way, but I would love to organize the first walkout of every marriage that's on the books in the United States. Every human get divorced, because I don't feel like you should get a tax benefit because you've decided to say, I'm living with this person now. It was a tiny step to just assimilate, and assimilation has not always been the best route for revolutions. In our country, it has been the route, and it has still left people in the margins. So as someone who is, you know, recognizing the privileges of marriage, that was a really hard decision to make, wanting to be a part of the movement and knowing it goes against every part of who I am as this, you know, wannabe radical kid who's trying to push for queer youth. I was working at the Queer Youth Center in Salt Lake City when the Constitution was changed to say marriage is between one man and one woman. And I'm working with all these youth who are saying, why is this our fight? I want to know how to ask someone out on a date and where do I take them? And you're telling me to fight for marriage? I want to learn how to be safe and not get bashed in my school. And so thinking about all of the things that we could be fighting for. And one last thing at the, I think it was either Chicago or New York City. It was San Francisco. San Francisco Pride March, the Black Lives Matter group were going to march in the parade. But because of so much police presence, they had to drop out for the safety of their own community. So I really feel like, yes, it's part of the queer community's responsibility, number one, to step out, come out, be visible. And if you know someone who is queer or love a queer person, be visible with your words. Let people know that you are supporting of them. Number two, I am a guest, right? So I can say things like don't vote for Trump. You can't, but I can.
I can't say any okay. of that, but you as a right. guest on the show can say whatever you want aside from a few words.
Yeah, let your legislators know who you are because they're supposed to, in quotes, represent you. People don't know how to verbalize who they are. Tell your representatives who you are and how to vote. And then the third one is to be mindful of the intersections. We have to advocate for every being that does not carry the privilege that we carry. Use your privilege for good. Even if you feel like you don't have privilege because you're this one component, you have privilege. So do something with that to help liberate other people and get people access and speak up and speak out. So I feel like there's a lot of work to do, and I'm really excited to be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm doing a roundtable. Thanks for rolling with me on the tech stuff, everybody, and Bob. Talking about 25 years of Pride in Spokane, talking with Adrian, Michael, Bob, and Jansen. I kind of want to circle back, if you guys are okay, to something that you just mentioned, Bob, about marriage and heteronormativity. I wonder, just in terms of political identity, I think part of the challenge in the LGBT movement has been, and the queer liberation movement has been, that the identity in some ways, you know, sex and gender are already things we don't talk about in our society. You know, there's a lot of just like sex phobia in our society. Mm-hmm. So it automatically kind of like makes the whole movement like dirty and like this thing that we're not going to talk about. And you get people yelling in the street about perversion and whatever. And that seems like it's going away. But what is the like queer identity to you outside of that? Like what else, what does it mean other than who you choose to or not to sleep with? Is that a fair question? Well, that,
yes, but that's a whole show in itself.
Depends on the queer.
You know, mm-hmm. I truly believe, I don't remember who it was, one gay writer said that we're a constellation of traits, you know. And this is actually something that I write about, and which is the resilient nature of queer spirit. Because I do believe that we've always been in the vanguard. We've always been among the healers and the artists and the compassionate and the outraged. That's a whole heritage that we don't really, you know about and pass on to the next generation. And I feel like we really need to focus on that. I want to say something about that, the marriage thing too. You know, when we Gay Lib started, which, you know, Stonewall was sparked by queer trans people of color, you know, and now here we have Orlando, which was a massacre of queer trans people of color. So that's something we need to look at. But in the beginning, you know, gay liberation was about at its heart a feminist critique of marriage. You know, it wasn't about, you know, people having relationships. We wanted people to have relationships. But it was a critique of the institution as this capitalist design to distribute property, you know, along with all the other roles that partners were supposed to play. And we felt, we believed, we insisted that people can love more than one person at the same time. Mm-hmm. So that set us on a different trajectory, but events happened later on down the road, like AIDS and the Christian backlash in the late 70s with Anita Bryant and the Briggs Initiative in California, and then AIDS. And so a lot of people, I think, got scared and bought into the shaming. And so that's another piece that we really have to talk about, and is detoxing the shame.
Mm. That's a really good term for that. Cultural detox.
Yeah.
Can I say one thing about the queer? Like, I think a lot of people who are probably listening maybe just don't. They're like, why are people saying queer? Don't they know it's a bad word? And it's not a bad word. It depends on how you use it. So tip number one, never use any label in a negative way, and you'll be okay. Tip number two, queer can, it depends on the identity, the person who is talking, but queer can just be an umbrella term for someone's gender or their sexuality. But everybody has a gender and everybody has a sexuality. And so it depends. A lot of especially younger people are now identifying as genderqueer. I identify as genderqueer and a queer person. And so it can be anything that's outside of the norm in terms of gender and or sexuality. So I just want to put that out there for listeners who might be like, wait, what's up with that?
Thank you. I meant to say that, actually. I got a text when I was looking for people for this show. I put a Facebook post that said, where are my queer youth at, basically. And I got a text from a family member who was like, whoa, don't you know you're not supposed to say that? And I was like, it's cool now. It's fine. It's all the way back around. But thank you for your concern. So thanks.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about that. I'm going to be 50 next month. And people my age and older tend to be still very reactive to the term queer. And I'm starting to become more comfortable with it just because of the people I know and hang out with. But, you know, a gay or bi man, or especially cis man or cis woman of my age or older who you call queer, will take umbrage and they'll flash back to being, you know, beaten up in high school or middle school. I can actually remember the first time I was probably in second grade, and one of my friends said, hey, let's go play Smear the Queer. And I thought I was going to get beat up. And I mean, I just flashed on that memory. And queer, as Bob says, is a very all-encompassing. It's what it means to you when you identify as queer, I would say. But I like Bob's definition of I'm a queer person who is genderqueer. And I think it's a very multi-purpose word.
Mm-hmm. It's the F word I don't like.
Yeah. Well, and there's some words that you're never going to see reclaimed, right? So you're never going to see. So queer first came about in academic studies, and then it started hitting mainstream when, you guys remember Queer Eye for the Straight Guy? That's the first time people actually started seeing it visibly mainstream, used in a positive light. You're never going to see, and I'm stealing this from Jude, who uses this in trainings, but you're never going to see a show called N-Word Eye for the White Guy. It's not going to happen. And so really being mindful of terminology and where it comes and why things are getting reclaimed and how they're being used is really important. It's also part of the history, like for mm-hmm. queer people to know their history, know why how marriage equality came to be, what's our next realm in terms of liberating marginalized people. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's really important to remember that when I was a young college graduate, it was before Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And we've come to a point where not only can openly gay and bisexual people serve in the military, but starting at the end of the month, starting on July 1st, I believe, openly trans people can serve our country. And I posted that, and one of my friends was like, well, that's helping the oppressors. And I'm like, well, but if it's something that feels right to you, you at least have that option now. And that's not something that I would have even dreamed about 5 years ago.
I think you can be straight and queer. For me, queers are people who have a spirit and sensibility that's just too large to fit into the narrow, you know, strictures of heterosexism.
And there are a lot of youth who actually are identifying as straight and queer. And I was noticing that at the Queer Youth Center in, you know, 99, 2000, because it was right after the state had banned all extracurricular activities because some kids wanted to have a gay GSA, Gay Straight Alliance. And so they're like, you can't have that. But it's illegal to ban one club, so they just got rid of all clubs. So that was a big deal for a couple of years. So we lifted the ban, and so kids started having gay straight alliances. Most of the kids in the alliances were straight, but they had queer family members. And so, or if they had friends, they weren't going to the alliance, but they were coming to the Queer Youth Center. And so when we asked people to sign in and name the demographic, because we could write it in grants, we had all these straight kids who were like, where's the S box for straight? And we're like, we don't want to count that we're serving you. I'm sorry. And so they actually would write in straight and queer, and their justification was it's the perception of being queer or the perception of not fitting into gender norms. So they're getting just as ridiculed and just as bullied and just as targeted for being perceived as queer or hanging out with queer people. And so they really appreciated the safe space because they got to be an ally in a way that they didn't get to be in their schools and in their families. And so I think that there are a lot of people as they're kind of coming up. I think it depends on how long you've been a part of the community or have understood your own identities. You're more comfortable with some of these labels, but there are a lot of younger people. And now these kids are, I don't know, probably in their 20s. They have like man and like adult, they have adult bodies now. It's weird to see them, but the straight queers, it's true. I liked how you said there's definitely a queer spirit and there's a history of our people that it's in a lot of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm wondering about that. So part of why I wanted to do a kind of a 25 year retrospective and looking ahead is just, I feel like I came up through high school with, you know, queer family members and things like that and friends, in like a real period of fast change. Like I was in high school from 2004 to 2008 and it was pretty okay to be gay, but also like there was drama with administrators. School dances were a big deal. In middle school, they banned all hand holding because there were gay couples holding hands in the hallway. And it was the same thing with the clubs. Like, well, no one can hold hands then. Try to get middle schoolers to not touch each other. You know, it's like not an option. But I'm just wondering, and maybe this is like, I guess it's a question for all of you, but I'm curious, Jansen, your experience being even younger than me, is that a fair perception to just say that, you know, like the kids are pretty much all right now and they've seen more of, I think, the breadth of human identity and are generally more accepting? Or am I just wanting to believe that's true and seeing it where it's not there?
Personally, especially since I just graduated, I see a lot of acceptance from youth of my age. The problem, however, lies with older audiences. One of my biggest personal fears is TSA guidelines in airports. As a trans man, things that are help me publicly transition and pass as a cis man would be considered banned or grounds for me to be searched. And these aren't individuals who are my age that work in TSA. And so my generation, I feel like we have a stronger grasp on the love one another, see past your skin. But we fear older generations that might not have gotten the memo, per se.
One of my, I call him one of my Garants. He was a big part of my transitioning as a proud man in my early adulthood. He likes to say that he sees a time in the near future, perhaps even in our lifetime, where being queer is going to be like being Irish. Yeah, there's going to be a couple of bars and a couple of parades, but other than that, it's not really going to matter anymore. But and in some ways, I really envy people of Jansen's age. But in another way, I'm like, when people use the slur against me in middle school or high school or even university, it was an abstraction. It was an abstraction. And now that so much is known about our communities, I think there's more. There's the potential for more malice when, and again, the haters are going down swinging. Mm-hmm. So there's more venom, I would think, in some of those slurs now than there were 20 or 30 years ago.
I think that, yeah, I agree that there's a lot of acceptance now for alternatives, you know, especially amongst younger generation. But I also feel politically now is the time to convert that acceptance into laws and policies. You know, I agree that the protesters, you know, they know that their domination is eroding, but that makes them dangerous, I believe, you know. And so to go back to that question about what now in the movement, I really feel that we do have a lot of public acceptance of our alternative view of the world, but now we need to solidify that into laws and policies, especially designed around violence and our safety. You know?
I can't speak for an entire generation, obviously, but I feel like we're on the cusp of becoming the new face of authority, with especially politicians, mayors, individuals who have the power and ability to make change. When we're on the throes of being able to to push these laws for safety for everyone and individuals, marriage, etc. It's almost frustrating because we don't have that whole grasp on it yet. We're still seen as children in the eyes of the public, mm-hmm. and as a movement, we want to continue to push because we're trying to follow our successors, because you guys have made insane progress. And I feel time will most help our efforts. Efforts was the word I was looking for.
I think we have to go ahead.
Just time and organizing.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely.
I think there's a really good quote I heard this last weekend, and it I don't remember the woman's name who was quoted, but it is this thing that I'm just going to like make sure everybody, especially in marginalized communities, hears. But we have to operationalize our outrage. Mm-hmm. We have to. Practice and policies have to change if we want to see sustainable differences. And it would make me so sad if at one point our gender and our sexuality and the color of our skin didn't matter. I think that's like a dreamy place if there hadn't been so much horrible things done to people because of their gender and their color of their skin and their sexuality. I think our identities do matter, and I hope that they always matter. And I hope that because of the identities that we bring to the table, we can be strong. But if we pretend that these identities are all kind of blended in and we're all human, we're going to continue to make minimalistic decisions that do not provide access and opportunities for everybody. It will continue to be a joke. Young people need to be a part of the conversation before they turn 18. They need to be a part of making decisions in their own school systems. They need to be included and feel as welcome as people who have money and comfortable. Welcome and comfortable as people who have money and power, who are willing to just show up and feel like they can make a difference. I just look at what is happening with Trump. Like, I cannot believe he has gotten as far as he has. And the amount of people who are overtly willing to say, I support this person, who so overtly claims to hate so many people. Like, it fathoms me. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like young people, yes, there's a lot of passion. There is still so much apathy coming from young people, which makes me nervous because I see apathy from people who are burned out from doing this work for 20 years, where they feel like, what difference mm-hmm. is my voice making? But for, you know, the little starfish here, it makes a difference. And I think we have a responsibility to create ways to make sure voices are included into the problem solving and the policy making and the decision making. And it's going to happen by putting pressure on everybody who's in a position of power and all the people who think they're not in a position of power.
Mm-hmm. And if you're just joining us, I'll just remind you, you're listening to Praxis on KYRS. I'm talking with Jansen, Bob, Michael, and Adrian of our Spokane community, talking about LGBT activism over the years, talking about 25 years of pride in Spokane. And I guess on pride, when we say that, we mean 25 years of a pride march and or festival in Spokane, Washington. It's pretty great that that's been going on for 25 years. What was did all of you go this year? I know, mm-hmm. I know Michael obviously did as the main organizer. Everybody was there. What did you guys think this year? For those who missed it.
I'm going to start just by saying I'm darned proud of what we accomplished, but I'm afraid that the decision, a couple of board members and I were walking around last year's festival, and we asked people, what would you like to see? And somebody said fireworks, and a couple of us looked at each other and like, yeah, I'd like a pony for Christmas too type of thing. And then we found out that while it was a big chunk of our budget, it was affordable. And unfortunately, we did a poll on our Facebook page, and several hundred people said, you've got to do fireworks every year now. But I still take a great deal of pride in getting the banners downtown, getting the pride mm-hmm. flags downtown. And unlike Bob, I'm not comfortable channeling a rage. And mm-hmm. and so, yeah, I'm doing what I'm comfortable doing, mm-hmm. and And one of my friends was with me when I was reading comments about the article about the banners and the pride flags downtown, and I was obsessed for like 20 minutes on this one comment saying I was offended by this. And he's like, Michael, it's one comment out of 50. And I said I did a newbie of, I made the mistake of reading the comments, and I don't read the comments, but I did this one time.
There was a point, I went to the Bernie Sanders rally that happened, and there was a news station that came around, and we were there pretty early. So they took a picture of a few of us sitting there, and I happened to be in the photo, and they posted it on their Twitter account. It was a local news station. And one of the comments was, I can't believe this is today's youth. Are they crazy? And I wasn't offended at all. I was thinking, to Bob's comments and your comments, this idea that there didn't used to be a pride, that with the starfish metaphor, that you have one person that feels like they can't make a difference, but if you inspire enough people, like the first gay pride movement was a riot.
Right.
It might not have to be anymore, but that doesn't mean you can't be upset. It means that any effort you're willing to put forward to help these people, not only yourself, but your community, your neighbor, the people sitting in the room with you, is more than enough.
Mm-hmm. It made me really happy to see the banners downtown this year. I hope that continues a lot. I was thinking about the group of protesters who have their whole scene right now in their little cottage industry of spewing hate on the street. They don't have the leverage with the city to get banners put up that say, fear the genitals of others or whatever they would say.
I'm scary.
You know? Like, I think that made me really happy to see these just, it totally just normalizes, like, this is what we do in a city.
We're hoping to have twice as many next year.
Great.
I thought it was an amazing day. There were more people there that stayed the whole time. And I was so impressed with the people who showed up. It made me really excited for just a really good year. I mean, I celebrate Pride every day in June. I put my flag out. It's up. It's my favorite holiday of all holidays. And I was really pleased. And I think a Pride Day is usually telling of people's comfort level in a community. So for me to move here 10 years ago and see, 3,500 people at Pride after organizing a 32,000 person Pride in Salt Lake, I was really sad. But just, you know, the crowds were there and they were present. And I mean, to see the police and the firefighters in the parade this year, I've been
military
training all the
off.
Firefighters. Yeah. And just to see that shift, even in the last 12 months, it felt like, okay, it's going to be a little bit easier to walk into a coffee shop. I still won't walk into public bathrooms, but it will be easier to walk into a coffee shop. And that makes me happy.
There was a very sombering moment right after Pride, and it was the candlelit vigil that Spokane threw for Orlando, as did across the nation. And it was standing right before the speakers began and seeing familiar faces that I had just seen yesterday. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who the thought crossed my mind that these are my friends. This could have been us. And seeing that Pride was a success and just knowing that we were safe and for that day, the city belonged to us, it was phenomenal.
I was really glad to see all the families. That was different for me. You know, and for Spokane, it was good to see. I have, I just lost the train of thought I was going to say.
It's headed to the station.
I think one thing that's super, until you get your thought back, I think it's super important for people to remember that Pride is about LGBTQ people and voices and recognizing the movement and the progress that is still to be done. And that's the part that I always feel a little bit weird after Pride, because so many people come out to party and so many of them are not out. And, right. And so many of them aren't voters, and so many of them don't know how to advocate for themselves and the people that they love. And so I've always had that battle. And I think it's because I came out young, 19 and 20. My first Pride, I was 20. And I was surrounded by people who they were apathetic. And I came out in Utah. I lived in Salt Lake during that whole time. And it was a different, it was different living in Utah. But I just feel like I wish there was something more to be done than just gathering and celebrating. Like it's always twofold for me. And so I know that's a part for a lot of people who attend.
Yeah. I think, you know, something that kind of bothers me is that I suspect that in this day of internet and social media that a lot of gay people feel like there's no need for a center. But I think there is. You know, when I worked at the center in Hollywood, that was the best job I ever had. You know, I mean, I just had to be myself. And there were all kinds of people from all kinds of backgrounds, and you didn't have to be gay to work there. There were straight people working there, too. And it was just a dynamic place. Every day was something was interesting was going on, or we were working to do, you know, solve this problem or that, or raise money for this. It was a great job. But I also think the coming together, people meeting each other, you know, the discussion groups were just phenomenal. You know, we got a lot of our best strategies for outreach from the kids, you know, during the group discussions. And I just feel like this, we sorely need this. And I understand there is a history about trying to do that here, but it didn't quite work. But part of that, I suspect, is that there is, you know, a certain segregation kind of mentality that I think we need to get over. And I remember what I was going to say when you were talking about the vigil. You know, I'm tired of going to candlelight vigils. Mm. I don't want, you know,
I'm tired of organizing them.
The president has had to give 18 different speeches about mass losses in his term.
Yeah. Well, I've got some good news. Somebody who was a key volunteer near the end of the most recent physical LGBT center we had in Spokane came up to me at Pride, and she said, "Michael, what are we going to do?" Mm-hmm. And so a group is forming, trying to get momentum towards getting a physical center in Spokane for what I believe is going to be the third iteration. But, you know, the sad thing is that it wasn't fiscally viable. And I like to say that careening from near accident to near accident is not driving down the center of the street. Mm-hmm. And good intentions don't pay rent or internet or lights or mm-hmm. cleaning supplies or even coffee. And unfortunately, our community hasn't learned how to channel caring into $900 a month to pay for a physical mm-hmm. center.
Yeah, and it's just so, I just think about having worked in youth development, worked with high school kids, a lot of whom also went to Odyssey Youth Center, mm-hmm. which is just an awesome program. Just like the tragedy of kids aging out of Odyssey is like, it's rough. You know, it's like, you're 19 now and you don't need
here's
resources.
The world.
Yeah, yeah. Surprise, here's everything. Figure it out. So
I feel like just as a part of the United States culture, most people don't know how to make friends. We don't know how to build community. And that's the part where, you know, you can walk into any nonprofit and I can tell you based on how the look on the board members' faces and how long the board has been around, what percentage over the course of however many years it's been alive that people volunteering for this organization, what percentage of them have both skill and passion? And most people have a ton of passion, but not the skill for organizing and, you know, like running a business. But I really feel like it doesn't, like for marginalized community centers and especially for LGBTQ ones, if we could get better at practicing building community, making friends, that's a cultural piece. You can take any public transit, and if you like looked someone in the eye and said, "How's your day going?" they would probably like scoot over another seat and wonder why you're talking to them. Put your headphones on. Like connecting with other humans is something that we avoid in the States for all kinds of reasons. It makes sense if you're a marginalized identity or have multiple marginalized identities because of safety issues. However, going to Pride and seeing people interact and just making eye contact and smiling, that is huge. Mm-hmm. It's huge because we don't do it. We don't practice it enough. I can still go. I go into Boots all the time, and luckily the staff know me. But you can walk all the way down people's chairs, and like if we know each other, we say hi. But if we don't know each other, it's like, if I don't see you, you don't see me. And I just feel like if we can get out of that habit and start practicing making friends, saying hello, building community, things would change and shift, and we wouldn't have to beg and plead for money to support services. We would also be looking at taking care of our community and not just taking care of our individual needs.
And part of that process, you know, as far as the political work goes, is we need to help people understand that being passionate for justice isn't about how emotionally intense you feel. It's about the quality of your commitment to justice work. I'd like to make a quick plug for an event. You know, I work at Peace and Justice Action League. On July 7th at 5:30 in the community building, we're having a book discussion. And the book is Doing Democracy, a Movement Action Plan Model for Organizing for Social Movements. And if you go to the website, and you go to their posts about Doing Democracy and click that on, there's a PDF link that you can download for the first three chapters of the book, for people who can't buy the book or anything. And one of the things we're going to talk about is like the four roles of activism, you know, the citizen activist, the rebel, the change agent, the reformer. You know, these are different roles people can play. And there's effective ways and ineffective ways to do it. And so that's going to be part of the discussion that I hope people will come and participate in.
I love that there's, like, naming some of those different roles, because I feel like so many people feel like, oh, I'm not an activist. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, when was the first time you remember ever standing up for another individual? It could have been the dog that was getting beat up by your dad. You know, like mm-hmm. the first time you remember standing up for another individual, that's what being an activist looks like and feels like, and creating change. I like naming what could possibly be my role, but helping people see the actions to take.
Yeah.
Every little action makes a big difference. And that's why I think it does take those little steps as much as it takes the, you know, radical movement of spray painting. I mean, I'm not a big fan of damaging property, but I am a big fan
Tell
of
me
doing
more.
What it takes to get people's awareness. Like, it takes right. all of us for that change to happen. And a lot of times communities will start arguing with each other. We can't have that there, and we can't have to do that. This is the way to create change. And it's like, it actually takes all of us. Do what you're the most comfortable doing, and you'll be doing your part. Mm-hmm. Actually, do the one that makes you a little bit uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and then you'll be doing your part.
Mm-hmm. And that actually is a perfect segue. We only have 5 minutes left all of a sudden, because you guys are great. What I just want to make it an action thing. So what going forward is a small thing you would like to see others do, whether in the gay community or the community at large, to keep kind of this movement moving?
It's so important for people today of all walks of life, youth and elderly, to just believe that they can make a change. When you think that your step forward can, if you add them up, you have a mile. That's a mile ahead of where you started. When you believe that things will get better, when you put in the effort to believe, that's the effort to make a change, and that's when change starts.
I just encourage everyone to stand up for what you know is right. If you hear somebody using a slur, and it doesn't have to be homophobic or transphobic, if you hear someone using a slur, say something. An example that comes to mind is somebody recently called a bartender in town it, because it's a trans individual. And I looked and I said, please don't refer to another human being as it. I mean, if you don't know their pronouns, say they.
Mm-hmm. Or ask.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like in response to the mass shooting in Orlando, people are saying love is love is love, and we just need to love. And I feel like we need some action. Like, feel however you want to feel, believe whatever you want to believe. But I would just encourage people, do something to make this world a better place. Use your voice. Recognize your body is political. And if you have any privilege whatsoever, use it to decrease suffering in the world.
Well, I'd like to get involved with helping revive a center, the idea of a center, you know, a queer multicultural center. That's what I'd like to see. But I also think we need to get into the schools. We need to have access to schools, not just to talk about bullying and not joining the military, but to also talk to men and boys about violence, renouncing mm-hmm. violence.
Yeah, you know what? If the Orlando shooter would have had a vagina, it would be all over that it was a woman shooter.
Female hysterics.
Yep, and they never name that it's the gender when it's a male shooter. And I just think it's such commonplace to not talk about pervasive violence and where it's coming from.
I would go so far as to say it's an epidemic of toxic masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a huge part. I think that's why it's so important to have a queer liberation movement, because it breaks down all of that social pressure that's put on people to be a man in this one specific way, or to be a woman in this one specific way that very few people actually fit into. And I think that's a lot of the beginning of all those cascading effects. So you have to be this person. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm not. You have to live your entire life in a high state of tension then. Right. Sorry. is there any, I always like to close with, are there any resources that people, if people are listening who maybe want to come out and haven't, have just, know somebody else, want to take their activism up a notch, that you all would recommend people seek out here in Spokane?
I have one that I just like to, for every parent or guardian that has young people, whether you know their gender or sexuality or not. Caitlin Ryan has an amazing, she's done amazing research and has like identified the 19 behaviors that have the most impact on an LGBT youth. And 9 of those are behaviors you should never do, and 10 of them are behaviors to do. And I would encourage anyone who knows young people in their life to Google Caitlin Ryan. You can go to familyacceptanceproject.org and find those resources. They're amazing. And attend any workshops and trainings that might be coming up. I usually do those trainings. And we are training the school systems, and juvenile justice just went through a round. But that's the number one resource that I always give to parents or schools or systems that are responsible for youth.
Well, a little bit of plugging here. Go to outspokane.org. Come to our meetings. We're taking a month off after Pride. And if you send us a message, we will try to find resources for you. Also, there's 2 Facebook groups, Out in Spokane and Out in Coeur d'Alene, that exist for non-bar-centric activities. Help out. Host a potluck. Start a coffee clutch.
I would say if you want to be an activist, you're young and you want to be an activist, get involved with the Peace and Justice Action League's Young Activist Leadership Program, which starts in September, goes year-round into June. It's once a month. It's free.
And it's amazing.
I think I can say as a graduate, I can't say go do it, but you can seek out information. It did a lot of good for me. Anything else?
I have one more resource, Queer Sounds at KYRS.
You stole my thunder. That's what I was going to,
And Outspoken, they're on Sundays. Queer Sounds is on Thursdays. And there was one more. But those are the things that are locally produced. And just to get to know your community, mm-hmm. you know, put a flag out on your house. Let people know you're queer.
Make anything a political statement. I brought, I wasn't the first, but... a few friends and I helped bring the queer movement into the Spokane Poetry Slam scene.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So cool.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for your time. And thank you all for listening. If you missed any part of the show and you want to hear it, you can find the podcast by going to kyrs.org, going to programs and finding Praxis. There's links there. You can also go directly to soundcloud.com/praxisradio, PRAXISRADIO. I'll be back next week with another live show. And you can also contact me at praxis@kyrs.org. Thanks so much for listening. You're listening to KYRS, Medical Lake Spokane, 88.1 and 92.3 FM.